Hi, this is Jerry Pepin. One of our favorite guests on the UFO Files is the alien hunter, Daryl Sims. And one night on our KBIX radio show sometime back in the year 2001, around March, we had Daryl on one night, and we started talking about how alien ETs feel to the touch. So I think let's pick up this interview with this description by Daryl about how the ETs feel to the touch and how they smell.
Feeling like very much like soft clay, because it's kind of moist.
When you say soft clay like that, it's pliable, huh?
At least to the touch, I mean,
it's like touching your hand. You push it in.
That is true. And yeah. The interesting thing is what they smell like. Now, this is where you catch a lot of people. A lot of these people, and I had, in fact, a lady two nights ago that called, and her and her daughter, she said, "Mr. Sims, I don't even know how to describe this. I don't even know what's going on, and I really don't want to know. But we've got this terrible smell on our hands after these strange dreams that my little girl and I both had last night." And I said, "Well, what did the smell smell like?" And she says, "Sulfur." And, of course, that's one of several answers that are all very consistent and very close together. And, of course, she asked the question. She says, "What is the sulfur from?" I said, "I don't have any idea." I said, "I can guess." I said, "Maybe that's where they come from. I don't know."
That may be part of a chemical base of their makeup.
You know? It's entirely possible.
At least the odor of it.
Well, they smell like other descriptions are given too. Rotten, mildewed leather or moldy cardboard. Things that tend to be rotten eggs. Things that tend to indicate that they're exuding something on the surface of their skin, or if that's what it is, and that there is no cleanliness involved. In other words, the smell seems to stay there. And if they touch you or you touch them, it gets on you as well. Sometimes you'll find the same smell beside your bed on the floor if they've been there next to you.
So conceivably, you could, for lack of a better description, I guess, tell they're coming by smelling them.
Well, interestingly enough, some people, and this is fairly rare, but some people seem to know or sense when they're coming either that day or even hours before, and they start getting real scared.
I'm going to pay you account to that.
Unless it was some type of, my thinking is the way they even find you is through possibly a neural scan. Perhaps this is, at least it's a metaphor of how they find us. They know exactly who we are and where we are, and only on the very rarest of occasions actually lose us. And they did my senior investigator for 22 years. But generally speaking, if they, let's say they are scanning you with something that could pick up your neural pathways and they identified you, some people might be sensory acute to that and actually notice that somebody's watching or sensing them in some way.
All right, I see what you're saying. Now, you, of course, had that first experience when, what, were you four or five, something like that?
I was three and a half. I use the term four, but three and a half is what
actually. And so you're after these guys with a mission.
You can just bet on it.
And I'm amazed, and you kind of glossed it over when I kind of half-kiddingly asked you last week, aren't you afraid they're going to seek you out again now that you might be getting close?
Well, I honestly don't have any concerns about that, because I think my last event when I was age 17, my events went on from age 4 to for 13 years till 1967, from 1952 to 1967, and at the end of those, the last event was so traumatic and horrific that I was actually working with a psychologist at the time at my high school, and we were studying scientific anomalies, which is a real hobby I had, and he was very fascinated with it. He was working with me, and long story short is after my event that night, I went to my girlfriend the next day, told her, because it started getting dark about 6:30, 7 o'clock, and I started getting scared. I mean, I thought they were coming back. I told her the story, and this is the lady I was supposed to marry, and she looked at me like a calf looking at a new gate. And, of course, you got to understand, back then there were no aliens, there were no stories. Betty and Barney Hill was the closest thing to anything, and back in 66?
Yeah,
so here I am telling them the story, and she just said, "Well, you've had this terrible, terrible dream." And then so she took me to him, because I would not be consoled. And he told me the same thing. Well, when they land, they're going to land on the White House lawn and give the president a new gift or something. I said, "Hey, I saw the movie. It doesn't work like that." And he said, well, this must have been a dream. You've had a terrible, terrible dream. I said, well, whatever my dream was broke the lock on my door coming in. The lock is broken from the inside to the room. The door doesn't open outward. And no one in my house woke up over the event. And I just went on and everything. He just sat there white as a sheet. He just didn't know what to say. Of course, back then, like I said, nobody knew what to do. Nobody knew what you're, even if you're telling the truth. Now a lot of people are coming forward telling the same exact story since I did, since 1952.
Well, okay, we have our first phone caller here tonight, Daryl. Last week, we didn't take any phone calls because we were so entranced and enthralled with your story, I forgot to answer the phones.
Sure.
But Ed is listening on KBIX in Muskogee, Oklahoma. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, I got a question. Back about 1978, over the course of about 75, I think, I was sound asleep, and I had woke up, and my family was not in the house, okay? So anyways, I went out the front door of our house, and on the corner was a group of people standing there, and they were looking up, and what it was a disc-shaped object with lights, multicolored lights on it, and I remember that vaguely. I mean, I was a child then, but everybody thinks I'm crazy when I say that.
Yeah, now, hold on. Daryl, could you hear him?
Yes, I could.
Yeah, okay. Daryl, say hello to Ed.
Hello, Ed. How are you doing?
Pretty good. You doing all right?
Very good, sir.
Thank you.
I guess what Ed really wants to know, Daryl, is how old were you when you... I guess he wants to know if he might have had some kind of experience he doesn't know about. I mean, like, did you ever see a flying saucer, Daryl?
I'll answer that two ways. My answer, your question is yes, I've seen over 50 in my lifetime. The second question is that many abductees actually do not, quote-unquote, see or pay attention to the craft that they're taken by. The only thing they remember is being in the room or being somewhere else and then something happening.
Ed, were you in Muskogee when you saw this?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well.
My daddy was born in Muskogee.
Yes, sir.
Good place.
Okay.
Great people live there.
Ed, we probably haven't answered it very much for you, but, you know, there have been sightings around Muskogee. I have one guy, Daryl and Ed, when I was doing a network show on the Independent Broadcasters network about 94, 95, I was over the studio across the hall here. We were doing a UFO show, and I said one night, anybody, you know, I never have heard anything from our listeners at KHJ, which was the station was carrying us at the time here in Muskogee. I never have heard anybody from Muskogee tell me about seeing a flying saucer, and a guy called up and said he saw one about the size of a football field over south of town around Davis Field. You know, and since then, there have been big reports of that, floating blimp-type objects. So,
yes. Yes. Did you have a question, sir?
Well, I got one more thing to tell you. And I also remember, at the south of town, this was in the middle of the day, I must have been 11 or 12 years old, the sky was very orange, okay? And there was a object in the air, and we had called the Muskogee Police Department, and they explained it as being a weather balloon, but it didn't move like a weather balloon. This thing moved back and forth.
Well, I've got some wonderful film footage of an object moving against the wind, and it looks like a gigantic rope, probably hundreds of feet long, in a twining figure eight form, just floating through the air, going in different direction. And I can't explain that, and I don't know any police officer could either.
Okay, thanks, Ed.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yes, bye.
You know, I think he brings up an interesting point. I want to ask you something about this, Daryl, and that is the fact of these abductions. You mentioned last week, and I got several responses by email about the fact that what was a 45% American Indian and Irish of your people that you think that are abductees?
45% that we've worked with out of over 1,000 cases worldwide, 45% of the people we've worked with are Native American Indian.
Now, the point he's bringing up is there's two sightings he made here in this little town of Muskogee. I guess it just runs the gambit of where these people are abducted from, huh?
Well, there's. I'll give some other stats for your audience if they have an interest. 31% of the people that we have worked with worldwide, I mean, this is France and everywhere else, have reported a rare drug allergy to Novocaine, Lidocaine, Xylocaine, any of the cane family, cocaine. Of course, nobody can admit that. But the cane family itself is a rare drug allergy, and up to 31% of these people, based on our stats, have this rare drug allergy.
Well, you know, I immediately think, Daryl, about the smelling like sulfur and now this statistic. I mean, there's an answer there someplace. We just don't know it, right?
65% of our people report cravings for salt during their, especially after their events. And it's interesting, in a support group, you can put good healthy food on one side, you know, vegetables and all kinds of neat stuff. And we purposely put salt, like potato chips and all kinds of salt foods on the other side, and watch everybody gravitate like cattle to the salt lick. it's really funny to watch.
I still crave salt even months after the abduction?
That is correct. In fact, a movie producer out in Hollywood took me to dinner after a shoot we did for 2 days, and he and his team were sitting there, and they bought me this huge medium-rare steak, and they did, I noticed they were watching me. I couldn't figure out, well, what in the world are they watching? So I took the lid off my salt, and I just coated the top and the bottom of this thing and poured about half of the rest of it in this little container for the sauce, and they just were shocked. He said, you mean all this stuff you've been telling us is true? I said, absolutely.
So you still crave salt?
Absolutely. Yes, yes.
See, I, personal basis, I thought maybe I had had an abduction experience, but I don't really crave salt.
Well,
I just remember a strange man by the side of my bed when I was very young.
Yes.
A strange figure, a humanoid figure.
Yes.
Which is probably just a dream on my part.
It could be. That does happen. 63% of the people that we work with report night blindness to some degree. 72% report phobias, often that are not even natural. 30% reported the smell of the sulfur on them or in their home or in their events. 88% have unexplained burns, bruises, marks, cuts, lumps, scars, long finger bruises, anomalous markings, scooped out places, or even strap marks where they've been held down in their event.
You know, I can understand the phobias part, because some of these people, and you know, I've heard terrible stories, and then some people think it's a happy experience, and you and I kind of visited about that last week, where you said it's kind of in the eyes of the beholder.
Well, the entities do something rather remarkable. They have two things that they do to you. And the easiest way probably for your audience to understand this from my point of view is think of them as a genetic engineer, which I don't think they are, but we'll use this as a model. They're a genetic engineer, and they have two different kinds of lab rats. One of them are lab rat pets that they like, and they can pat and then give them a big shot or whatever, and of course traumatize them with a shot or whatever it is they're doing to them. And then you put them back down, and then they tell the little lab rat pet that you won't remember, and they usually don't. In fact, they'll give them a what is referred to as a screen memory, which is from Freudian psychology, and it basically means it's something in place of a real memory they don't want to remember. It's a traumatization. The second group are people those are called contactees. The abductees are people who are the same lab rats, but they do remember, and they won't forget. And they don't have the same experience. They will not accept the screensaver memories in many cases.
In other words, it's not that pleasant. You feel they remember the real thing.
Well, in fact, these type of lab rats will bite you if they remember anything. And so they tend to get a little more punished for it.
We are talking with, I like to call you the alien hunter, and in fact, I think you get some kind of movie deal working in that direction, and we don't want to talk about it too much and jinx anything, Daryl, but you've had quite a life. Before I get into some of these past things, I want to get back to the implants a little bit with you. Before we get to that, what's the latest in your life? Is there anything you can share with us that you're working on right now?
Oh, yes. I'm wanting to do my own TV shoot, first of all, because I'm tired of giving all these people this great stuff on TV and then making a fortune off of it, and then our work just literally barely makes it on what little they give us for the research. So one of the things I've discovered and I want to work on is a rather large object that we found underground in a foreign country, and some of the scientists that are working with me think it's a UFO. I don't think it is, and I've told them that, and one of them is absolutely insistent that it is a UFO, because it's shaped just like a UFO, and it's about that size, and it's about 10 feet underground.
So you haven't dug it up yet?
It's a big one. So I have a little tiny sample, and I've done some study on it, and I want to produce that. I want to do a show that shows a fake UFO, a, in this case, a misrepresented object that could easily be a UFO in most people's eyes, but isn't. And then I eventually, the third thing I want to do in the show is actually show a case where we're actually involved in looking for, in a real story of a UFO, in which there, in fact, may be evidence.
Well, that'd be an interesting project. I think there's enough interest out there. I surely you'll get that off the ground here pretty soon. I hope so. I want to ask you a little bit about these implants. We didn't get into a whole lot of details about that, but you generally are accepted to be either the first one to figure out that there might be implants in some of these abductees, or one of the first. And Roger Lear gets a lot of that credit, and I guess you worked with him at one time, right?
Well, actually, he worked for me on our project. Uh-huh. I was had a number of surgeries done before our first public surgeries in 19, and at that point, I'd asked Dr. Lear, who is a foot doctor, to surgery.
I couldn't remember whether he was a podiatrist or a dentist.
Yes, but that's correct. And we had to get an MD to do the other surgeries. In fact, an MD's done all the other surgeries simply because he is not able to do those type of surgeries. He's not qualified to do that medically. But now we have a cardiovascular surgeon, this is a kind of an unpleasant little aspect, but one of the reasons I had to let Roger go is because some of our evidence started disappearing, and the abductees were screaming about it. In fact, they still are. And since it was in his care at the time, that and some other problems, I
understand. I'm not trying to dig up any dirt or dishes.
No, not at all. So we had to let him go. We have a cardiovascular surgeon now that handles all our cases and very well qualified. In fact, is up for admiral.
But Lear, you know, has a lot of people who say varying things across the spectrum about him. And I understand when you first met him and brought up the subject, he was kind of a skeptic.
He did not believe in any of this, and of course, I've been through this for about 10 years with over the whole spectrum. I kind of see a little more of the whole picture, and especially from some private talks that we had. But basically, I think he saw the unusualness of it after. I made two medical predictions that were impossible before the surgeries. I said, if these, in fact, are real alien implants, or this phenomena, we're going to find no signs of inflammatory response, either chronic or acute.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing we're going to find is that these objects have the wrong nerve cells present around them. And after that, he called me that afternoon with the other doctor, and they were literally freaked out, and they wanted to know, how in the world could you predict something that would be medically impossible? And I said, I guess you'd had to been there. I said, in 1960, was on the other end of that business and had something rammed up my left nostril in my own experience. That's how I discovered implants, and that's why I knew so much about them.
Did you remove that implant?
The object, we've never found it afterward. Sometimes they will come back apparently and remove these objects themselves from time to time. We have a number of cases where this is, in fact, we even have x-rays. I've got one of x-ray of an object that looks like and is the size of a lifesaver deep in the person's skull. This is a case in Brazil. And a few months later, the object is gone. And, I mean, the object is solid. It is radio opaque. You can even see ridges on it. I mean, it's just an amazing case.
Well, did the subject remember being abducted another time?
They remember the abductions, but they don't remember how the object got out.
Yeah, I just wondered if
unfortunately, I've not worked with the individual personally, so once I can get to them, I think I can get a lot more information.
I wanted to ask you about this other organization that you've been associated with or at least worked with. I don't know a lot about them. Parsec,
yes.
Yeah, that's a psychotherapist associated for the research and the study.
Well, it's the Parsec is an organization that invited me to join their organization. They're all MDs. Several of them have PhDs and MDs. They're a remarkably sharp bunch.
Are they in Europe someplace?
They are in Italy. Uh-huh. In fact, I will be going to Florence and doing a presentation there in mid-May, and then when I finish there, I will go to a scientist's home and stay there for 3 days, and we'll work on an implant detector by is one of the things he's going to develop for me, as well as several other things that I have on my little
shop. Did you say an implant tester?
An alleged implant detector. It'll be a device that will look at a number of signatures at one time, so I can scan a human being and see if we can get some type of signature from the alleged object that may be putting out a signature.
A signature, like what?
It could be a signature that might be that might.
You're looking for something abnormal.
Anything that would that would not be natural coming from a human being.
Okay. I just want to get clear in my head. Now you don't have a medical background, do you?
The only background I have in the medical field is strictly through my hypnotic anesthesia training. And my medical certifications in medical hypnotherapy. Other than that, my only involvement in that is whenever I go into the OR and work and do hypnotic anesthesia on patients, or whether I work with
You've actually done that.
Oh, that is true. Yes,
in fact,
the movie, the TV program Confirmation that was on TV, I was the one doing hypnotic anesthesia on the patient there.
And then that's pretty interesting in itself. That's a whole new story right there. You just mentioned that, it popped in my mind, this alien autopsy thing that came up several years ago, and I guess it turned out to be a fake, right?
That is correct.
And were you involved in that in any way?
Well, yes and no. I wasn't involved in the initial thing, the initial exploration and the initial showing of the film and that sort of thing. But I did go to England 4 times in 3 months, and I met with Ray Santilli, the one who owned the film, who bought it. And I sat down with him and finally convinced him to release a small segment of the film to me, in which he did. I came back to England, and a courier, in fact, it was Philip Mantle, delivered the film to me personally at a meeting at a TV after a TV show. And I reviewed the film and had a university in Canada to look at the film. These people are not UFO related and very tough, and that's what I wanted. And we were able to determine that film that I had, that he gave me, the claim was part of that film, was in fact not even the age that he was claiming it.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that was fraud. I thought it was fraud simply because of the fact that I'd already spoken to him, and I'm extremely good at determining whether people are lying or telling the truth when I question them over a period of time.
Well, I better watch it.
So I thought I had him anyway, and whenever he gave up that piece of film, that was it. I mean, that was the coffin, nail in the coffin for me.
Right. So the only reason I mentioned some of these things is to get clarifications on it, and also to let our audience know that one of the things I found out about Daryl Sims, folks, is that kind of just report it wherever the ball lands. In other words, if it turns out to be a hoax, you're ready to admit it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Unfortunately, as I said before, some of the revelations from another book, and I won't mention it, about implants, said that there were crystalline implants and all kinds of things we found. That's just not true. What the professor asked me from the university was, what do you think this one is? And I said, I think it's a shard of glass from a mason jar, personally, because it was found in the person's foot, and it looks like that. Mm-hmm. And he analyzed it and said one of his scientists broke a mason jar in a million pieces and found one just exactly like it with the same exact consistency, chemically and everything else. So, unfortunately, that was not reported, even though we had the report in hand. The report came out, it was a crystalline implant. Well, that's just not true.
Well, these implants are wrapped in some sort of cocoon thing, if I remember correctly.
That is true. Some of the objects, the first public surgery, and you got to understand, in 1988, I was doing this and having surgeries done independently. I didn't want any of them public, simply because I wanted to make sure I had a case before I brought the first two cases publicly. The first two cases were brought publicly in 1995, and the two surgeons were there, a foot surgeon and a general surgeon was working on the patient, one hand and one in the foot. All the objects had a biological cocoon. So the best way to think of this for your audience is, imagine, if you will, a rare meteorite in a perfect T formation, a capital T formation, wrapped in human skin from the surface of the, like the scoop mark area that people report having as an abductee, wrapping that that perfect T-shaped rare meteorite material in that cocoon, and then nerve proprioceptors and nerve tissue spreading out from that and attaching itself to a main nerve supply in the body, and being there for 30 years and you not knowing it even was there, and there's no scar, no sign of how it got there. And that is the way it goes down.